But the outstanding phenomenon of this period was the revival. Liverpool Echo, January 18. Wales in the grip of supernatural forces. This was in allusion to the developing frenzies of the revival, and the accompanying luminous things, or beings, that had been reported. Supernatural is a word that has no place in my vocabulary. In my view, it has no meaning, or distinguishment. If there never has been, finally, a natural explanation of anything, everything is, naturally enough, the supernatural. The grip was a grab by a craze. The excitement was combustion, or psychoelectricity, or almost anything except what it was supposed to be, and perhaps when flowing from human batteries there was a force that was of use to the luminous things that hung around. Maybe they fed upon it, and grew, and glowed, brilliant with nourishing ecstasies. See data upon astonishing growths of plants, when receiving other kinds of radioactive nourishment, or stimulation. If a man can go drunk on God, he may usefully pass along his exhilarations to other manifestations of godness. There were flares where they'd least be expected. In the big stores, in the midst of waiting on customers, shop girls would suddenly, or electrically, start clapping hands and singing. Very likely some of them cut up such capers for the sport of it, and enjoyed keeping hard customers waiting. I noticed that, though playing upon widely different motives, popular excitements are recruited and kept going, as if they were homogeneous. There's no understanding huge emotional revolts against sin, without considering all the fun there is in them. They are monotony breakers. Drab, little personalities have a chance to scream themselves vivid. There were confession addicts who, past possibility of being believed, proclaimed their own wickedness, and then turned to public confessions for their neighbors, until sinful neighbors appealed to the law for protection. In one town, a man went from store to store, returning things that he had not stolen. Bands of girls roved the streets, rushing earnestly and mischievously into the more sedate churches, where the excitation was not encouraged, singing and clapping their hands, all of them shouting, and some of them blubbering, and then some of the most sportive ones blubbering, compelled into a temporary uniformity. This clapping of hands, in time with the singing, was almost irresistible, some vibrational reason, power of the rhythm to harmonize diverse units, primitive power of the drum beat. Special trains set out from Liverpool to Welsh meeting places, with sightseers, who hadn't a concern for the good of their souls, vendors of things that might have a sale, some earnest ones. Hand clapping started up, and emotional furies shot through Wales. There were ghost scares in the towns of Blyth and Dover. Blyth News, March 14. Crowds gathered around a schoolhouse, something of a ghostly nature inside, nothing but the creaking of a partition. I pick up something else. We wonder how far our neo-medievalism is going to take us. Perhaps though our interpretations will not be the same, only medievalism will be the limit. Blyth News, February 28. Smoke that was seen coming from the windows of a house, in Blyth. Neighbors broke in, and found the body of the occupant, Barbara Bell, aged 77, on a sofa. Her body was burned, as if for a long time it had been in the midst of intense flames. It was thought that the victim had fallen into the fireplace. The body was fearfully charred. Something was slaughtering sheep and things in the sky of Wales, and it may be that there were things, or beings, that acted like fire, consuming the bodies of women. London Daily News, December 17, 1904. Yesterday morning, Mrs. Thomas Cochran, of Rose Hall, Falkirk, widow of a well-known, local gentleman, was found burned to death in her bedroom. No fire in the grate burned almost beyond recognition, no outcry, little, if anything else burned body found, sitting in a chair, surrounded by pillows and cushions. London Daily Mail, December 24. Inquest on the body of a woman, who had died of the effects of mysterious burns. She could give no account of her injuries. An almshouse, late at night, and something burned a woman. Trinity Almshouse, Hull. Story told, in the Hull Daily Mail, January 6. Body covered with burns, woman still living, when found in the morning, strange that there had been no outcry bed unscorched. The woman, Elizabeth Clark, could tell nothing of her injuries, and she died without giving a clue to the mystery. There was no fire nor light in the room. On both sides of the River Tyne, something kept on slaughtering. It crossed the Tyne, having killed on one side, then killing on the other side. At East Dipton, two sheep were devoured, all but the fleece and the bones, and the same night two sheep were killed on the other side of the river. The big game hunter from India. Another celebrity came forth. The Wolf Committee met him at the station. There was a plaid shawl strapped to his back, and the flaps of his hunting cap were considered unprecedented. Almost everybody had confidence in the shawl, or felt that the flaps were authoritative. The devices by which he covered his ears made beholders feel that they were in the presence of science. Hexham Herald the right man, at last. So finally the wolf hunt was taken up scientifically. The ordinary hunts were going on, but the wise men from India would have nothing to do with them. In his cap, with flaps such as had never before been seen in Northumberland, and with his plaid shawl strapped to his back, he was going from farm to farm, sifting and dating and classifying observations, drawing maps, card indexing his data. For some situations, this is the best of methods, but something that the Methodist wise men cannot learn is that a still better method is that of not being so tied to any particular method. It was a serious matter in Hexham. The ravaging thing was an alarming pest. There were some common hunters who were unmannerly over all this delay, but the Hexham Herald came out strong for science, the right man in the right place, at last. There was, in this period, another series of killings. Upon a farm, near Newcastle, late in this year 1904, something was killing poultry. The depredations were so persistent, and the marauder was so evasive that persons who are said to be superstitious began to talk in a way that is said to be unenlightened. Then the body of an otter was found. The killing of poultry stopped. For a discussion of the conclusion that to any normal logician looks obvious, see The Field. December 3, 1904. Here we learn that otters, though ordinarily living upon fish, do sometimes vary their diet. But no data upon persistent killing of poultry, by otters, came out. This body of an otter was found, lying on a railroad line. France in the grip of military forces. August, 1914 France was invaded, and the people of France knew that France was invaded. It is my expression that so they knew, only because it was a conventional recognition. There were no wise men to say that reported bodies of men moving along roads had nothing to do with mutilated persons appearing in hospitals, and that only by coincidence was there devastation. The wise men of France did not give only a local explanation to every local occurrence, but of course correlated all, as the manifestations of one invasion. Human eyes have been made to see human invaders. Wales in the grip of supernatural forces. People in England paid little attention, at first, but then hysterias mobbed across the border. To those of us who have some failings, and now and then give a thought to correcting them, if possible, but are mostly too busy to bother much, cyclones of emotions relating to states that are vaguely known as good and evil, are most mysterious. In the Barmouth Advertiser, April 20, it is said that, in the first 3 months of this year 1905, there had been admitted to the Denby Insane Asylum, 16 patients, whose dementias were attributed to the revival. It is probable that many cases were not reported. In the Liverpool Echo, November 25, are accounts of 4 insane revivalists, who were under restraint in their own homes. 3 cases in one town are told of in this newspaper, of January 10. The craze spread in England, and in some parts of England it was as intense as anywhere in Wales. At Bromley, a woman wrote a confession of sins, some of which, it was said, she could not have committed, and threw herself under a railroad train. In town after town, police stations were invaded by exhorters. In both England and Wales, bands stood outside theatres, calling upon people not to enter. In the same way they tried to prevent attendance at football games. December 29 Wolf killed on a railroad line. It was at Cumwinton, which is near Carlisle, about 30 miles from Hexham. The body was found on a railroad line, magnificent specimen of male grey wolf, total length 5 feet, measurement from foot to top of shoulder, 30 inches. Captain Baines, of Shotley Bridge, went immediately to Cumwinton. He looked at the body of the wolf. He said that it was not his wolf. There was doubt in the newspapers. Everybody is supposed to know his own wolf, but when one's wolf has made material for a host of damage suits, one's recognitions may be dimmed. This body of a wolf was found, and killings of sheep stopped. But Capt. Baines' denial that the wolf was his wolf was accepted by the Hexham Wolf Committee. Data were with him. He had reported the escape of his wolf, and the description was on record in the Shotley Bridge police station. Capt. Baines' wolf was, in October, no magnificent full-grown specimen, but a cub, 4.5 months old. Though nobody had paid any attention to this circumstance, it had been pointed out, in the Hexham Herald, October 15.